up our podcast this week. It's time for the Refinerendum, as the Neon Demon director Nicholas Winding Refn and his star Elle Fanning drop by for the most important interview of our lifetime. Plus, the usual movie news and nonsense on the podcast is preparing to say goodbye to one of its own. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. As ever, I'm joined by three colleagues of such lethal cunning this week. Helen O'Hara.
Howdy.
Johnny Pyle.
Hello, mate.
And Dan Jolin.
Greetings.
Now, you may have noticed I've spared them all a pithy intro, and Helen went to Glastonbury last week. I mean, talk about a fish out of water. I mean, and I can't even make a joke about that, because we're flipping the format this week. We're flipping it a little bit.
Right.
Questions will come at the end, and also because we're hurting. We're hurting, which is why I didn't do pithy intros this week, because this is Dan Jolin's last podcast as a staffer here at Empire. Because after a decade of glorious service aboard the good ship Empire, he's buggering off in search of pastures new. But don't worry, we're going to send Dan off with the dignitas, the dignity he deserves. Yeah, you're leaving, man.
Yeah, that's actually 12 years.
12, I know, I said more than a decade. 12 years.
I'm not ashamed. 12 years. There you go.
12 glorious years.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get into it all, Dan, later on. We've got a lot of questions for you from readers. We've got a stream of people coming in to give heartfelt testimonials. It'll all be really rather emotional and lovely.
Who's coming in? What?
A stream of people.
A stream?
Star guests.
Okay.
I've arranged big names.
Big
A-list names.
Top men.
Top men. No one's coming in, Dan.
Oh, okay.
No one's coming in.
All right. Well, Johnny's here.
Johnny's here.
I'm here.
He's a big name.
Johnny's a big name. Johnny Pyle is a big name. That's one syllable. Helen O'Hara. Actually, Helen, I will ask you about Glastonbury. How was it?
Yeah. It was really muddy. It was a bit noisy, I'll be honest. I felt like people
muddy and noisy.
Keep it down, guys.
People didn't seem to know about 10 o'clock bedtime. It was weird. But no, I had a wonderful time. I was working at the Pilton Palais, the cinema tent, hanging out with Tilda Swinton, among other people. She was our film star in residence. But at one point, I got up on stage to introduce her. And so I opened with "Hello Glastonbury," because I mean, how often are you going to have the option of
almost
saying "Hello
never.
Glastonbury" to a packed house of people at Glastonbury? And I introduced her, and she came on stage, and I immediately slipped in the mud when trying to get off stage. So karma works fast.
Oh my god!
You're like Jennifer Lawrence then.
I basically am Jennifer Lawrence. Yes.
Congratulations!
Did you fall all the way over?
I just slipped down to my knees in the mud, and Tilda Swinton's very nice partner, husband, boyfriend, person.
Other half,
Sandros picked me up, and he was very kind.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. So yeah,
did you style it out? Did people see?
Oh, yeah. Everybody was looking at Tilda Swinton. It was fine. No one is looking at me when Tilda Swinton is speaking. It's okay.
All right. I hosted a press conference once at Cannes with Quincy Jones and Brett Ratner, and I fell over. All the way over. I went to sit down and I fell over.
Wow.
Did Quincy pull your chair away from you as you went to sit?
Yeah, it was a classic Quincy Jones prank. Yeah, it's tough to come back from that. So I just started mooning everyone. Right. Okay, well, good to have you back from the mud-soaked hellhole that it is Glastonbury. Right, because we're flipping the format in its head this week, we're going to start with the movie news. And in fact, we're going to start with a shameless plug. Because today, when we record the podcast, is New Empire Day. The new issue of Empire has hit the stands. Subscribers should already have their issues. And it is a belter. But it's a belter for several reasons. One, it's a cracking issue, great issue. Star Trek Beyond is the cover movie. Fantastic cover feature inside there as well. We also have a supplement, a 60-page Star Trek supplement covering 50 years of Star Trek, because this year is a huge Star Trek anniversary. So we have marked that with this wonderful supplement with lots of new interviews and looks back at the films and the TV shows and all sorts of stuff. But it is also a sort of noteworthy issue of Empire because it is a redesign.
What?
A redesign.
No one told me.
Are you aware of this, Johnny?
Is it?
It is.
Oh, look, it looks different.
It is.
It looks great.
It looks fantastic. It is fantastic. And Johnny Pyle, as deputy editor of the magazine, is here to talk us through the redesign and tell us what's happening. What's going on?
Well, yeah, we've redesigned it from front to back. And
But you start with the front, right?
Well,
I mean, the front cover is still the front cover. It's not that radical.
This is true. It still has Empire on the front.
Whew.
Not in red, though, this month, you'll notice.
Okay.
And, well, one of the big things we've done, at least I see it as monumental, I don't know how often you change the words by the star ratings, but we have
They stayed the same for a very long time.
It's probably a decade. It was... Yes. Under Collins' leadership, I believe, that we once changed that.
And now correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm doing this from memory, but it was 5 stars was unmissable.
Mm-hmm. Unmissable.
And then excellent for 4.
I think so, yeah.
And then good.
Yep.
And then okay. No, not okay. Then
poor.
Poor. And poor. Then tragic.
Tragic. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds right to me.
So what have we got now?
So now 5 stars means excellent.
Sure.
Because I don't know that you can go higher than that. Because unmissable to me, I would say Batman v Superman was an unmissable film, but I don't think it's a 5-star film. I think that it becomes... Unmissable doesn't necessarily talk to the quality. It talks about the...
Cultural moment.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think I believe that that's a kind of... That's from an era when it was almost like there was the film that you had to see that month,
mm-hmm.
whether or not it was actually a standalone classic film that would for the rest of time would be seen as a masterpiece. If it was just the film you had to see that month, then it could get a 5-star review.
Hence Cloverfield, actually. There was a debate, do you remember? And yep. Cloverfield got its 5-star rating on that basis.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so these are modern star ratings for the year 2016 and beyond.
For the millennials.
So, it's excellent, then...
Good.
Then...
Uh-huh. Okay.
And...
So, then poor.
So hang,
then awful.
And finally...
Awful. So hang on. So 3 stars is now okay.
Yeah.
Is that a recommendation? Because
yeah,
I kind of have a catchphrase here. It's pretty set in stone. I mean, I was going to get a T-shirt printed up. I think that's still a recommendation.
That's
isn't
still
it?
A recommendation. Yeah.
So what we found in the office that we were always like debating what the star ratings should be, and people thought different. 2 and 3 meant different things almost. So hopefully that is clearer, so then the star ratings will be more representative of the review that they decorate.
Awesome. And there's another change to this section, which is that it's not just cinema releases now.
That is absolutely true, yeah. There's TV in there, and there's actually games as well. So they are still vaguely sectioned off, because you have all films, and then we move on to TV and streaming platforms.
Sure.
So it seems to me, I mean, Fundamentals of Caring sits in that TV and streaming section because it's available, premieres on Netflix, but you know, it actually premiered at Sundance, and you know, Netflix could have gone to the cinema. You know, it's a film with Paul Rudd, so it seemed odd to me to relegate it to a back section when it's you saw it and hated it.
Disliked.
Fine, disliked. But you know, we have a new TV show with Ray Liotta and Jennifer Lopez, whose name, even though I was looking at her and reading her name, I suddenly forgot.
Yeah, she's
just for a second.
She's fairly famous.
So you know, that's in there. And, you know, Orange is the New Black, the new season of that, you know, was one of the biggest entertainment launches of the past month, and so that's why that is in there.
So again, it's reflecting the sort of cultural shift in people's viewing tastes and how we consume media.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Awesome.
And also there's a logic to it in the sense that that's the section where the things you're seeing for the first time, the new things.
Yeah.
It kind of did seem strange to be putting new things that you're seeing for the first time in a section which was more originally about, you know, returns of, you know, things on DVD and Blu-ray and stuff
absolutely.
Like that. So there's I think there's a nice clean logic to it.
Absolutely. I'm delighted that you feel that way.
Yeah.
If not, we'd have to fire you.
Well,
too late, Johnny, too late.
Beat you to it.
You've missed your opportunity.
There's another major rejig going on towards the back of the magazine as well. The review section has had a pretty major overhaul.
Overseen by your good self.
Yes, this is true, but it is a review section, but we've done something pretty radical with it.
Well, I mean, it's a very simple thing on the surface. It's that there aren't newly written reviews for films that, you know, we reviewed 3 months ago. So Deadpool is in there. It's covered over 3 pages, but we are not re-reviewing it. We are doing a viewing guide on the understanding that It's so recent that we wrote a review of it. It seems pointless to just write another one. We have our Empire review. It exists online.
Agreed.
And now, you know, we can actually enjoy the film and engage with the film more rather than just saying this is good about it, this is bad about it. We can like go deeper with all these films. So Deadpool has a viewing guide, and there's a wonderfully conceived illustration of the bunker in 10 Cloverfield Lane, where the director, Trachtenberg, he talks through, you know, the process of making it and all the little things that they hid there, and you know, and so on and so forth.
He was very taken with the illustration that Ollie Gibbs, one of our brilliant designers, spent ages on. He watched the film over and over and over again to try and get the layout of the bunker right. So he talks us through all the different things, and Trachtenberg was raving about that the other day on Twitter and Instagram. So glad you like it, sir, if you are listening to the podcast, and why wouldn't you be? But yeah, the idea is basically with this that we're no longer going to repeat ourselves, so just 2 or 3 months. We're going to go deeper into films. We're going to have essentially, really, it's another feature section in a way. We've got in-depth features. For example, this month we have a 3-page feature on the enduring magic of Highlander, where we spoke to Christopher Lambert and Clancy Brown and Russell Mulcahy, and we've things like Best Times, Worst of Times. A Movie Mastermind is back, and there's a great feature on how Black Phillip was the breakout star of The Witch, where we talked to the director, Robert Eggers. There's all tons of great new stuff. Sally Hughes, the great writer, has a new column in the magazine going forward, which is great. We have, and I will absolutely fess up to this, we have a new regular called the First Take Club, which, if you are a follower of the Ram Album Club on Twitter, you may go, what? Because in this, people will be watching films for the first time and writing about their take on them. It is absolutely, I will hold my hands up, 100% inspired by the brilliant Ram Album Club, but it is done with the blessing of Martin Fitzgerald, who runs the Ram Album Club. And in fact, for a long, long time, we were hoping that he would actually actively be involved in this, but we couldn't quite make it work out. He's a very, very busy guy. So this is something I'm really, really, really happy with. It's a really, really good thing. We have Paul Merton writing about Buster Keaton. He's a huge fan of Buster Keaton. It's a really cracking section, I think.
Can I just say on a personal note?
Myself.
Yeah, I say on a personal note. And also, there's a new regular thing in it called Kids Watch Classics. The first ever First Take Club is my son Louis.
Yes, it is. So basically, Kids Watch Classics is young kids watch classics, and then we interview them for their reactions, and hilarity ensues, and that's one of the fun things in there. It's a really, really cracking issue of Empire. There's fantastic features. I don't want to overstate the case and don't want to bang on about it too much, but it, you know, there are some pretty radical reinventions going on here, and we just wanted to talk you through them, hold your hand, and make sure everything's okay as you step with us into this new and exciting era. But there's some amazing, amazing things in the issue. The Star Trek Beyond feature is fantastic. The Star Trek supplement is fantastic. There's an interview with Sophia Batella. There's a great feature on Jason Bourne. Here's the guy who wrote it.
You're awful.
It was great by the time I finished with it.
That's right. Dan's just here to make me look good. Yeah. Spoke to Paul Greengrass and what's the guy's name? The guy who plays Jason Bourne, Matt Damon. Spoke to Paul Greengrass for so long for that he was on his way back from the editing suite, and he was in a car, and I spoke to him for so long for this feature.
He finished the film by the time.
Stopped off to get a takeaway on the way back. So if anyone saw a tweet I did about a month ago where I said, I tweeted something like, if you get to the point where you have to say to the interviewee, okay, you've got a takeaway now, I've got to let you go. That was who I was referring to, Paul Greengrass. There's a great feature about David Brent, Life on the Road, Ricky Gervais. Helen interviewed Baz Luhrmann about Romeo and Juliet 20 years on. And there's Christopher Walken, the Empire interview done by Johnny.
Yep.
And there's a really interesting feature on Steven Seagal's On Deadly Ground. So there's a little bit of something for everyone there, I think.
Plus the Star Trek supplement, which is fantastic. Yeah. Goes through all the series, the movies. There's interviews. There's a quiz. It's wonderful. I didn't get full marks on the quiz. I feel like I'm going to have to hand in my Trek badge.
Especially as we wrote it and then made it easier.
Mm. Oh, really?
Honestly, the first take of that quiz was impossible.
Oh, I don't know which one I did then. I think you did that one. I missed a question. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. It's okay. You can't win anyway. You can't.
Oh, there's a competition.
I don't know if it's a competition, but you can't, you know, as an employee of Bauer Media or, you know, all
yeah,
that,
it's not
all
a competition.
Stuff.
It's fine.
Okay. You're all
right. It's just for fun.
There's no such thing as fun. It's all competitive. The new section preview is also fantastic. Loads of great stuff. But anyway, listen, yeah. Don't want to do the hard sell. We've got other things to talk about, and we're going to be self-indulgent enough anyway with Dan at the end of the podcast. So all I say is a fantastic, fantastic issue. Really, really proud of it. £4.99 in all good and evil newsagents. You can't say fairer than that. Unless you can say fairer than that, in which case, well done. Right. So let's talk about actual movie news as well that happened this week. A big story that happened overnight is that after being criticised, rightly so, last year, the Academy, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, have invited 683 new people into its ranks, and 46% of those are female, 41% of those are people of colour, in a clear attempt to increase the diversity of the Academy and to stave off, I think, further criticism about last year's Oscars whitewash. Hashtag Oscars so white. So new members who've been invited, and a large part of it comes from people being nominated and winning over the last couple of years. So John Boyega has been invited into the Academy. Well done, Finn. Well done, Moses. Idris Elba. Lufa
is an Academy member.
Okay.
Today we're cancelling the apocalypse.
As we say.
Today we're cancelling Oscars so white.
Yeah, absolutely. The Oscar
apocalypse. Which is great.
Yeah. You know, Tina Fey, Emma Watson as well.
These are good people. Kate Beckinsale.
Sarah Bennett, a local Londoner who won for VFX last year.
Is she in Luther?
She's not in Luther.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm kidding. Well done. Brie Larson, Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan, who should have been invited immediately once they completed Creed, because it's amazing. They've also been invited, as have Anthony Anderson, Adam Beach, Chadwick Boseman, Carmen Ejogo, America Ferrara, Greta Gerwig, Carla Gugino, Regina King, Tom Hiddleston.
Through his girlfriend.
Rachel McAdams. Tom Hiddleston, am I saying that right?
I don't know. I think
you're thinking of Tom Huddleston.
Tom Huddleston, yes, of Stoke in England. Wait, does he play Stoke anymore?
Who's the one that plays
Nottingham Forest?
Who's the one that played who played Santa Claus? Is that David Huddleston?
That's David Huddleston. I think you're thinking of Tom Huddleston of Time Out, who also writes some young adult Star Wars novels.
Ah, right,
which
okay.
is one of the best examples of moonlighting I can think of.
Amazing.
Marlon Wayans has also been invited on the list. Nate Parker, who's the director of Birth of a Nation, which is coming out later, actually next year over here, has also been invited. Rachel McAdams, as I said. So they're really, I think really, this is a bit of a stealth play for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if you ask me. So they got Loki, they got Rachel McAdams, they've got, you know, they got Michael B. Jordan, they got Ryan Coogler, the director of Black Panther, you know, John Boyega's in Black Panther.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was their criteria.
Chadwick Boseman, they got the Black Panther. I think I know where they're coming from with this.
Okay.
Brie Larson may well be Captain Marvel. Do you know who should be a good front runner for Captain Marvel?
Who's that?
And I say this just as someone who's really, really got into FEEP in the last couple of months. Anna Chlumsky.
Interesting.
Yeah. Just do it. Just cast her, man. Come on, Kevin.
I remember when she was in My Girl.
Yeah.
I think she
with
does
Macaulay
as well.
Culkin.
She remembers that as well. Alicia Vikander and Mark Rylance are also on the list. It's a cracking list. Do you know who's not on the list?
Who's that?
Me.
Yeah, no, well, that's because, you know, you haven't made any films.
And you're an old white man.
Okay. I'm not old. B, I haven't made any films, but I have been in Hostel Part 2.
I mean, weren't you cut from a theatrical release?
I was cut from the theatrical release of Hostel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But not Hostel Part 2, Helen. but good to see Nick Dissimulian is not on the list either for his dreadful performance as Edmund in Jurassic World.
Yeah, screw him.
Yes. I can't believe you just
screw
signed
that
off
guy.
Edmund.
Yeah.
Screw that guy.
Yeah.
It's a cracking, it's a really, really good list. Go and check it out. 683 people on the list and a admirable, I think, attempt to increase diversity. And what I think that will mean as well, and we talked about this in the podcast too, that'll change, I think, the nominations going forward.
Hopefully so,
well.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which is very, very cool. So well done, the Academy. Lots of interesting...
And Youngblood too.
Youngblood, Lenny
Abrahamson.
Yeah,
he's kind of 24 years old now. I think he's now the age of the youngest Academy member. So the age range is 24 to 91.
Anything else happening in the world of news?
Just not a huge, massive piece of news, but I mean, kind of, you know, more casting's been going on for Spider-Man Homecoming. So they've now cast Tyne Daly, who was, of course, Cagney or Lacey in Cagney and Lacey.
Ant or Dec?
Yes. Cagney or Lacey. So I never really watched Cagney. I'm going to be honest. I never really watched it. I was too young. But it was always coming on as I was going to bed, I seem to remember. But that music was great.
Amazing. I do. Please stop.
I went a bit too high there.
Yeah, you should have gone a bit lower. I don't know what key I was supposed to be in.
What is happening?
That was Tyne Daly's great monologue from the opening. Yeah. The opening episode of Cagney and Lacey. Don't you remember? When Lacey turns to her and says, "Hey, Cagney, what's going on?" And Cagney goes,
"No, stop."
No, okay.
The only Cagney and Lacey I acknowledge are the daughters of Terry Crews in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Carry on.
Okay. So, I mean, sorry, that was just an excuse to badly sing the theme music to Cagney and Lacey.
I'm so sorry. I just imagine people's ears exploding as they went very high there.
Sorry. So, yeah, so she's joined the cast. But, of course, no one's saying who she's playing or what she's doing or where she is or why.
Mm-hmm. Funny enough, that leads me on to our next news story. Barkhad Abdi has joined the cast of the Blade Runner sequel, but no one knows who he's playing, what he's doing, where he'll be, or why.
Amazing. Yeah. That's good, though. He's good. He's great.
I mean, it's great to see him get work. Obviously, he impressed us all in Captain Phillips. He was very good earlier this year in Eye in the Sky, and it's great to see him getting more stuff. So hopefully this is a proper, you know, size of a role, but we don't know what it is yet. Absolutely. And we don't know the name of the film yet, actually. We're still just calling it Blade Runner sequel.
I think it's going to be called... Do androids still dream of electric sheep?
Right. Okay, well, fingers crossed for that then. No. Denis Villeneuve's still directing. We've got Ryan Gosling, Robin Wright, Dave Bautista, Ana de Armas, Mackenzie Davis, Sylvia Hooks, and Carla Jury.
I know what it should be called.
What should it be called?
Double Deckard.
Anyway.
Wait. Ryan Gosling's character is called... Wait, hang on. He's called Monaghan Black. What an awesome name. He teams up with Rick Deckard. Together, they are Black and Deckard.
Please stop.
And their theme tune goes a little bit like this.
I'm begging you.
Okay, right. Sorry. I don't know what's happened.
There is one bit of really weird news that deserves our attention for a moment. Tetris.
Sorry, because
this is an Empire scoop.
Yes.
This is as scoopy as we get.
Yes.
Fucking Tetris story.
We fucking scoop the shit out of this. Honestly.
Anyway, Helen, sorry, I was trampling
please.
All over your scoop.
No, I mean, it's not my scoop.
It isn't your scoop, that's right.
Not only are they planning a Tetris movie, God help us all, they're hoping that it will be a franchise.
Yes.
The first of a trilogy of Tetris movies. Purely because the story we've conceived is so big, says the man in charge of bringing it to the screen, Larry Kazanov. This isn't us splitting the last one of our 8 movies into 2 to wring the blood out of the stone. It's just a big story. Well, so there you go.
It's incredible that you can squeeze... one film out of Tetris, never mind 3, but who am I to argue with the visionary Larry Kazanov? I think this could be great. This could be fantastic. All the pieces are falling into place.
Oh.
What?
Nothing.
It could be absolutely awesome. I will say, and again, I know we did a mammoth hard sell on the issue a while ago, but there is a genuinely really, really great scoop in the news section, which is that Colin Trevorrow, the director of Jurassic World and Star Wars Episode 9, has given us the exclusive first look and first word on his new movie, Book of Henry, which nobody knew anything about, and now you can read all about it in the hallowed pages of Empire Magazine. So there you go. So that's a great one. It feels to me that we should talk about Game of Thrones, but it's tough to talk about Game of Thrones.
Without any spoilers, I don't think, I will say that I thought it was a pretty satisfying season overall. There were some ups and downs, but generally a very satisfying season. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting that we seem now to be moving pieces towards each other rather than away from each other, as if building towards some kind of, one hopes, conclusion. Now, the word actually this week from the showrunners is that they're planning two more shortened seasons, so perhaps a total of about 13 episodes, mm-hmm. 7 then 6. Mm-hmm. But that will bring it to a conclusion, a finish, an end. And that is kind of exciting because it seems like maybe that's where we're headed right now.
I was absolutely blown away by this season. I was absolutely in love with it. I didn't think it put a single foot wrong. Absolutely. It still, to me, had the amazing shocks and surprises that you want from this show, but at the same time, kind of shifted into, like you just said, kind of shifted into more of a kind of a classic narrative that you would begin to hope for at this point in the overall story, where, like you say, that they're coming together, and the kind of, the rise of the Starks again is happening, and obviously Daenerys is finally stopping sitting around in that blooming pyramid.
Mm. Yeah, it's to quote Winston Churchill, it may not be the beginning of the end, but it's certainly the end of the beginning.
Yeah,
so it feels, like there's movement.
And I thought that last episode,
the
opening sequence
terrific.
Of the last episode is now that's TV to beat this year, that whole sequence.
So we have 13 episodes left, two seasons, and I have to say I admire that, because this is a huge TV show. It is a cash cow for HBO, and they could easily have strung this thing out for 12-13 seasons. There are certain shows at the moment that show no signs of ever stopping. I'm not going to name names. Walking Dead, oh my god, Walking Dead, just don't seem to ever... Big Bang Theory! Big Bang Theory!
You really do Chris, something in your throat, don't you? Gosh.
You're right, man.
Chris.
I'm all right. Yeah, good, okay, thank you.
Okay.
And this is going to stop after eight seasons. So that's great. That's very, very good. They've announced some directors for season 7, including Alan Taylor. Ooh. Never mind that he directed Terminator Genesis. He's a really good TV director, and he'll be back.
He did some great work in the early seasons. I mean, some really good stuff.
He's directed it before. Jeremy Podeswa, who's also directed some episodes of the show, Mark Mylod, Matt Shackman. It's going to be very, very fascinating. People have asked on Twitter, they've asked Empire, and they've asked me, I'm sure they've asked you, Helen, as well, whether we'll be doing a Game of Thrones Season 6 spoiler special podcast. At the moment, no. Partially because we just don't have the time. Mainly because we don't have the time, frankly. In fact, we haven't even got around to recording our Independence Day Resurgence spoiler special, because trying to get us all in the same room at the moment is a bit like trying to schedule an Avengers movie. It's very, very tricky.
Except we don't have contracts mandating that we keep a certain month free.
Precisely. We don't have that. Or indeed money or notoriety or fame or six packs or any of the stuff that Avengers have. But it's all good. But who knows? Who knows what will happen if we suddenly get a moment of time, maybe in the next week or so, and we don't feel that we've missed the cultural moment, then maybe we'll do it and we'll see what happens. But I will say there are great Game of Thrones podcasts out there. EW do a good one. Joanna Robinson of Vanity Fair does a couple of great Game of Thrones podcasts, so check those out, and that'll hopefully fill your Game of Thrones spoiler podcast needs. Okay, so it's time now for this week's guests. Nicholas Winding Refn has been one of our favourite directors for a while. We liked him before Drive made him cool. And he's back next week with the Neon Demon. Phil Desemlian went along to talk to him and his star/muse, Elle Fanning. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Empire Podcast. Welcome back to the Empire Podcast, Nicholas Winding Refn. And on debut, Elle Fanning, here to talk about the Neon Demon. A real pleasure to have you on, both of you.
Thank you.
I think the film's obviously out in July in the UK, so Cam will be in the rear view by then. But it does seem like an obvious place to start, because you're developing an intimate relationship with the festival, it's fair to say, Nicholas. This time you were booed and heckled and also given a 10-minute standing ovation. Do you think Cannes should sort of get together before it makes a judgment and just work out what it's doing? Or are you happy with that kind of level of split, I guess, in the audience?
Well, I think what we
have to remember is that I am Can.
You are Can.
Because without me, it would be a really boring film festival.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, most of the things, you know, if you don't react to anything, why not just stay home and watch television? You know, our movie that Elle and I did, you know, The Neon Demon, brought everything that an event needs. We brought glamour, we brought beauty, we brought controversy, we brought vulgarity, we brought hatred, we brought anger, we brought love, and we brought hate. And, you know, creativity is all about reacting.
Mm.
Good and bad, that's your Indian lunch. I mean, how can you, especially with the digital revolution where everything is accessible, and there's an audience for everything, so somebody's opinions of good or bad is even like irrelevant in a way.
Yes.
Because of the future. And Elle and I, we come from the future.
Hmm.
We know what's going to happen. And I think for us, you know, and for me, this is my third time there, diversity equals success.
Right. Elle also, on top of that list of things that you've just mentioned, also brought a prom date to Cannes,
which is,
I don't know if that's a first for the festival. Did anyone tell you?
I know. I think everyone was very surprised by it. Also, prom is such a, like, an American thing.
Because
my prom was on the same night as the premiere. So I had to, you know, had to combine the two. My prom date came out and came to the premiere. So we had our prom night in Cannes, which was pretty spectacular.
Did you know that was happening before your prom date arrived?
I did.
You didn't just turn up and okay.
No, it wasn't like a surprise. Hey! Yeah, so we planned it and, you know, my mom got the whole photos on the staircase and like...
I've seen the pictures are there on Instagram.
Yeah.
Should we name check your prom date? What was his name?
Cassio. He's my best friend.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there wasn't necessarily a romantic angle, just
not
a long
platonic...
Not at all. Platonic...
I've known him, like, since I was really young. Yeah.
One of the coolest movie prom dates, I think, since probably Back to the Future.
Yeah.
The George McFly part of that, anyway. How are you describing The Neon Demon to your friends who haven't seen it and don't know too much about Nicholas's work, potentially? High school friends, for instance. Have you been asked to tell them what it's about and how are you framing it?
Well, it's a teenage horror film, which is kind of, that's how Nick describes it, and I think it's very true to that, but yes. It's also very, I mean, it's horror, and yes, it's terrifying, but it's also so glamorous and enticing and beautiful, though I think like all the blood in it is even beautiful and glossy, and set in the fashion world. I mean, it can be set anywhere.
Yes.
But it is set in that, which is kind of ultimate exaggerated glamour in this fantasy world in a way that's obsessed with beauty, because we're all kind of obsessed with beauty.
Yes.
I think.
That's not unfair. The obvious question is, what did you learn from Nicholas working on this? But I wonder, you've been acting since you were knee-high to a very small grasshopper, like 2-3 years old.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything from Elle on this movie?
I learned everything. I mean, she was more experienced than I was. She had done more moves than I had. She knew more about eyelines than I did.
Is that true? Really?
Yeah. To make The Neon Demon, it was all about, like always, who's going to play the lead. And for me, there was no other option. So everything was on depending on us meeting.
Mm.
I was casting unknown actresses, and there was no one that had the requirements that I felt could fulfill. There was no one that had it.
Uh-huh.
Or that thing. And I basically was able to set up a meeting with Elle. And prior to that, I had seen a few of her movies, and my wife had seen one of the recent films that Elle had done, and we saw this photo session, like photo spread that she had done for a magazine, and it was just like She's at whatever it is, there's that thing that this film needs. So this meeting was set up where my agenda was just like, get Elle Fanning, mission.
Mission Fanning, go.
Fanning, and you know, and failure is not an option because then there is no movie. And we had moved to LA, we had put the kids in school in LA, and everything was dependent. So we met at the house where we were staying, and you know, I think I was like, oh, this movie's about the 16-year-old girl inside of me, and you're going to be her, and this movie's about beauty and youth and teenagers and glamour and vulgarity and all those things that you say. And I think it went pretty well that
night. It did. Because I went into it thinking, I was like, oh, like, I really want to do this. Like, hopefully I get the part. Mm. And then Nick's like going into it like, oh, gotta get it out, which I had no idea. Yeah, I had no idea that that's what it was. But it was, and you walk in and it's like, he has like, there's like princess clothes everywhere, and like I met his two
daughters. Okay.
Yeah, you're
right.
Like, what? Yeah, Nick likes to dress up. but I saw, it's like, okay, like I saw, you know, the feminine side, or like I understood why Nick Refn was doing a movie.
Yes.
About, you know, because that's not his normal, that's not what you think of when you think of him. Maybe now you do, but.
Well, dressing as a princess or making
this
movie.
Making films about.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Know. Yeah.
I know that there's some unusual directorial, I guess, tics that Nicholas has. Violence motherfuckers, he says.
Oh, yeah, you did say that.
Is that something JJ did on Super 8?
Yeah, no. No.
Instead of action.
I've only heard that from Nick. But it helped us. That was the scene. And then that's when I really got punched in the face.
Did you?
Yeah, by Abby. It was, she's supposed to punch me in the face in the, in, you know, we're like, oh, we had the stunt guy there and whatever. And it was an accident. She's like, he's like, violence, motherfuckers. And then she like really punched me in the face.
Our movie's very fetish. So for all the fetish crowds, there's something for everyone in the movie.
Yes. Okay. There's a certainly fraternity of Empire podcast listeners who are in the fetish crowd, so I think they'll be pleased to hear that. Keanu Reeves is a surprise addition to your sort of cast repertory of actors in this movie. He does some, it's fair to say he's quite far from his kind of Neo persona in this. There is a scene where he effectively, I mean, I don't want to use the phrase deep throat, but it's kind of no other way to describe it.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to shock the two people that made the Neon Demon, am I? But I mean, you know, he takes a knife and he ends up, it you know, down your throat. And
yeah.
It's obviously not a real knife, but it still
looks
like.
No, but it was.
It was a real knife.
Yeah.
I thought it was a rubber knife.
Well,
not really rubber.
It was
like
very like
crouch.
It was
punched for real.
Yeah,
it's a real knife.
His face is like.
You know, there was tears about a whipping scene.
Okay, all right. So, yeah. How did Keanu? Was he? I mean, I gather he was kind of apologetic about having to subject you
well,
to these.
He is like the sweetest guy like ever. So polite and like whatever. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, like up for like whatever. It's fine, you know. But he, yeah, just like making sure. He's like, oh, is it okay? Is it okay? I'm like, yeah, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah. I really like that scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of the motel sequence is this, you know, you talked about a dream. It's a weird, dark, dreamy sort of cinema
stage. Colored
the wallpaper. Yeah. The, I mean, just being in that room with that wallpaper.
That was a real hotel.
That you didn't have to change that room at all because it
and
kind
it
of
smelled.
Did it?
Oh
yeah.
Did you? Okay. Do you send your location scouts? Just find me the nastiest,
find the most realistically run down motel.
Yeah.
And he came back with a few options. This was in Pasadena and near mountains, which would help with the whole tigers. Storyline.
Mm. Okay.
So, and then we went to see it, and it was just so horrendously scary and yet interesting. And it was a great place to begin the movie.
You got a bonus, I guess, your location scout for that. With the extra smells. I mean, it must make you feel, you know, the sort of three dimension of being in that setting as an actor.
Yeah.
Just to feel it and smell it. And
yeah, it's always better to like be on location in a place than, you know, in a studio or something.
I've got to wrap up very shortly. You're obviously a big fan of collectibles. I don't know if you had, you know, toys as a kid growing up. Do you have any thoughts on a movie tie-in toy for this film, The Neon Demon? Because it could be a kind of a dark, twisted take on Barbie, potentially.
That's cool.
With a detachable eyeball, potentially?
Yeah, or a throat cut.
Yeah.
Barbie doll.
And then you squeeze it and blood comes out of the throat.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Toys R Us, coming soon.
Right.
Elle Fanning, Nicholas Winning-Riffin, thank you so much for joining us on the Empire Podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was Nicholas Winding-Refn and Elle Fanning there, along with Phil Dissemblian. And now it's time to talk about the movie reviews. Only two films, two big films in the multiplexes this week to discuss. First up, let's start with Absolutely Fabulous, a movie, shall we? Hell's Bells, I know you saw this last night.
Yes, at the premiere, darlings. So it's been a little while since this was on our screens, and certainly a little while since it was, you know, culturally dominant on our screens. But Idina and Patsy are back, obviously played by Jennifer Saunders, who also wrote, and Joanna Lumley. And basically, they haven't learned anything. They haven't changed. They haven't grown. There has been no positive development in their lives. This will not shock you if you've ever seen them. The story this time has Idina struggling with her PR business, obviously, because she's terrible at it. And Patsy learns that Kate Moss is looking for new representation. So Idina is very keen to get the job. So they go to a party which Kate Moss is at, with a huge number of other celebrity cameo guests. Basically, Idina accidentally knocks Kate Moss into the river to her presumed death. So she becomes obviously hounded as a pariah. She's investigated by the police. She is, you know, a social outcast. And she decides to escape to the south of France with Patsy, of course, and with her granddaughter, who has the only working credit card in the house because, you know, she doesn't exactly spend money wisely. They head off to the south of France in search of a rich husband for Patsy so that the two of them can live in the style to which they've become accustomed. And it's fair to say it doesn't all work out quite as smoothly as you would wish. So that's the basic plot, which doesn't matter even slightly. Here's the thing. The plot of the movie is quite bad in the sense that we've seen it a million times. We didn't really like it the third or fourth time, never mind at this point. Filled with characters who just don't need to be there and who don't get enough screen time to really shine. Most of the celebrity cameos sort of fall flat, not all, but most. And it's all, a lot of the jokes just don't hit. The thing is, there are so many jokes that enough of them do hit that you're still laughing quite constantly. So that's why, I mean, I ended up giving it 3 stars. I mean, it's just, it's not well put together. It really isn't. And I can't stress this enough. You know, the cinematography is not good. The storytelling is not great. But I still laughed. And in a comedy, that has to be kind of a win.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is going to be a moderate kind of... a moderate success critically, but I think it's going to do very, very well at the box office because God knows the British people right now need to pick me up after the week that we've had. So this could be just the thing. But
it's not absolutely fabulous. It's kind of sufficiently fabulous.
It's sufficiently fabulous, okay. Yes. And I mean, you know, Jennifer Saunders is hilarious, and she's actually most hilarious, I think, in some of the tiny moments. There's a moment where she's trying to do her mindlessness, as she calls it. I think she means mindfulness. But she sort of takes a statue of the Buddha in her hands and goes, you know, what about all those alms I gave you? Where's my enlightenment? You know, that kind of stuff. And then she's trying to alm again and sort of make little bell noises with her empty hands. And that's funny. And it's much funnier than when they go broad and they go big. So I think it's when they trust the comedy of their leads that I think this film really, really shines best. It also doesn't work when they try to be emotional or sincere. It's awful at that point. But it doesn't matter. It's very funny.
No hugging, no learning. Didn't anyone learn anything from
learning.
Seinfeld?
Exactly.
Honestly.
Well, there's been no learning. It's just the hugging.
Yes.
Anyway, so we give it, or I give it 3 stars.
3 stars for Absolutely Fabulous, a movie, which we believe is still a recommendation.
Yeah, it's okay.
Three stars is still a recommendation.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay.
It's okay, everyone.
It's okay. And next up is Central Intelligence. Helen, you're up for this one again. It's The Rock and Kevin Hart, a little Hart and a big Johnson.
is the tagline for this movie.
Tagline of the year.
Saving the world needs a little heart and a big Johnson. I have a sneaking suspicion that is funnier than any joke in the film.
That is actually not true.
Oh, there we go. I'm
going to diverge slightly from the Empire Review at this point. So the Empire Review is a 2. I agree with many of the criticisms in it, and I will tell you what those are. But I feel a little bit more warmly inclined towards this film than perhaps our reviewer did.
Is that because of your overwhelming love and enduring love for Kevin Hart, The Rock? The Rock.
It is partly that, because I genuinely think he's excellent in this. I think he's absolutely hilarious. The film starts as a sort of it's got a little bit of a Cable Guy feel about it. So we start in a flashback. 20 years ago, 1996, Kevin Hart is the high school sort of valedictorian. He's president of his class. He's captain of every sports team going, plus the chess club or the debating society or whatever. He's the guy, basically. And he has his high school sweetheart there, and his life is basically made. He is the most likely to succeed. Meanwhile, there's a fat, weird little kid called Robbie Weirdick, and yes, Dan, stop sniggering, and who is basically bullied horribly by others in the year, and Kevin Hart is the only one to show him some compassion. So basically, Robbie leaves school with you know, friendly feelings towards him, and 20 years later the two meet up again. So by this point, Kevin Hart's character has not really achieved all he wanted to in life. He's doing okay, but he's not doing brilliantly, and he feels a little bit kind of like he's letting everybody down by not being a huge superstar. He accepts a new Facebook request from a guy who's changed his name sensibly to Bob Stone, and that turns out to be The Rock, who is, of course, what the little fat kid has grown up into. Apparently by the very simple expedient of spending 6 hours a day for the last 20 years in the gym. Apparently that's all it takes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, cool. What follows is a really genuinely strange encounter between the two of them. I mean, with The Rock wearing sort of unicorn t-shirts and cut-off jorts, jean shorts, and carrying around a fanny pack and just being really strange. And that's brilliant. The problem is then it becomes a spy movie, and that's not great. So when it's The Rock being strange, it's fantastic. And when it's The Rock being a spy, it's seen it all before.
Isn't there a feeling that The Rock needs to start choosing better material? That he is better than almost every script he has picked over the last 3-4 years, that he's in a succession of mediocre films that he somehow, through sheer willpower and charisma, turns into passable to good films? And what if he were actually united somehow with a great script and a great director? Think what he could do.
Yeah. In our review, Andrew Laurie's mentioned, you know, what, imagine him working with like an Edgar Wright or something. And you're absolutely right. That would be fantastic. He does deserve better than this. I think he makes the best out of whatever he does. And I mean, you know, this has made a huge amount of money already at the US box office. It's going to keep making more. Kevin Hart is an enormous comedy star, especially in the US, but increasingly around the world. So, you know, it absolutely makes sense from a commercial point of view to do this kind of thing. But it's just, you're right, it's not quite as sharp and as clever as I think we want for him. But I mean, it should be. I mean, it's Ross and Marshall Thurber who obviously did Dodgeball, which is a bit of a favourite.
Yeah, I love Dodgeball. It's one of my favourite comedies of the last 20 years. But at the same time, I love The Rock and I love Dwayne Johnson, and he's the same person, isn't he?
What?
I just wish, I want more from him, man. You know,
you remember him in The Other Guys.
He's so good in The Other Guys.
Not in it that much, but I mean, he was bloody great.
So good in The Rundown / Welcome to the Jungle. Yeah. You know, if he teams up with a really good, strong director, that's what I want. Instead, what we're getting over the next couple of years is another San Andreas and a Baywatch and a Jumanji.
Baywatch could work.
But it could all work. They could all be fine. But I
yeah.
You know, when you look back on, you know, when you look back in 20 years' time in The Rock's career,
he's going to be in Moana.
He's going to be in Moana.
With all my favourite people.
It's Fast 8. I mean, it's all fine. And he's great when he's a pinch hitter and he comes in the big franchise and he swings and he's all good. But I want more from him.
Yeah.
Start picking better scripts, damn it.
Well, anyway,
I'd say that to his face.
Yeah, sure you would. We gave this a little Hewitt and a big Johnson.
Depends. Well, yeah. There's a nightmare scenario, isn't there? My wife doesn't recognise that. So, I'm talking about my wife again. Depends how far away his face is.
Right.
In fairness.
So if he was like safely across like a chasm or something, you might shot across.
You need better scripts, man!
And then you'd run really
fast. Because he could probably traverse that ravine.
Yeah, he probably could. Yeah. Just jump it.
So basically what you're saying is you'd yell "you're a stupid head" at him and then run away.
No, I wouldn't yell "you're a stupid head" at him, because he's an amazing guy. I've met him and he just oozes many things, not least of which is charisma. Mm. And, you know, I want to look him in the eye from a distance. Through binoculars, ideally.
Yeah.
And whisper, "you need better scripts, man."
In the hope that he would be able to hear you, because he probably could.
That he might think that I am some sort of angel on his shoulder.
I'm your conscience.
I'm your conscience, Dwayne.
All right, Paul Rudd. Anyway, so we give this 2 stars. I personally would probably go 3, but that is just because of my enduring love of his rockness.
There are 2 other films that are out this week. One that sadly no one in the booth has seen. It is the film of the week just by sheer dint of star ratings, and also Kim Newman's raving about it in the new issue of Empire. It is Queen of Earth, which stars Elizabeth Moss and Catherine Waterstone. Elizabeth Moss stars a woman who's going through a very interesting, very complex breakdown, and it is a very apparently haunting, creepy film. So 4 stars for that if you can seek that one out. And the other one is a film called The Colony, kind of horror film with Emma Watson, not that great sadly. 2 stars for that one. But you know, again, if you want to go see those, then knock yourselves out. But that is it for the reviews section. And we realise that this is incredibly self-indulgent, but it is not every day that a bastion of Empire leaves. So it is time to say farewell to Dan Jolin. Please, if you will, you've sent a ton of questions in for him. So, you know, it's a lovely moment of introspection, retrospection. It's great.
I'm actually quite gobsmacked. I mean, there's so many questions came in and so many lovely comments on the old Twitter feed.
Why are you leaving, Dan? I think some people want to know first.
A lot of people are asking why. And it's just like, you know, I've done this job. I mean, the features editor, or as I'm now called, associate editor, brackets features, for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I mean, maybe you could call it a 10-year itch, I guess. I just kind of, you know, as amazing as the magazine is, and as much as I love working with the people that I work with and getting to do the things that I do, there just comes a point where you feel you need to change it up a little bit. Mm. And, you know, not be necessarily going into the same place every single day. And I kind of wanted to flex some different muscles and do some different things as a writer. Mm-hmm. Primarily, you know, I've got you know, some stuff I'm working on, personal stuff I'm working on, which I want to give a little bit more time to, and there's some other topics I would like to write about, as well as film.
Holy cow!
So yeah, that's the plan, to become my own boss, to go freelance, become a hired gun, if you like.
Uh huh.
So yeah, like Marshall Caine at the end of High Noon.
Bloody
I've
hell.
Thrown down my star and I'm going off to do what a man's got to do.
Wow.
What a Dan's got to do. I'm bringing myself that new horizon.
Okay.
I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
All right, let's get some questions. We're going to race through these. So people have been sending them in via Twitter. First question here, this is for you, Dan.
Yeah.
What are your fondest memories of Ali Plum? And this has been sent in by Ali Plum.
Ali Plum. As a very important person in my life, Ali Plum.
He used to be on the podcast.
Did he?
Now he's a big noise on radio.
Ah, right. Yeah. That Ali Plum.
Oh, good. I feel like I just whispered into your ear, like, you know, like the guy stands behind POTUS.
Why do you have to pick a particular bloody moment? I mean, that's requiring me to use my memory and stuff.
We could be screwed. All these questions will require you to use your memory.
He was always really fun working with Ali, and, you know, talking about Breaking Bad with him and stuff.
We're off to a good start. Next question is from at Chapman CMC. What will it take to make you stay? I don't believe Chapman CMC is authorized to make any offers.
Yes.
Or to negotiate on the behalf of Bauer Media.
Yeah. I don't know. Option to work from home 5 days a week for twice the money I'm on. How about that?
Oh, I mean, that seems totally reasonable.
Yeah.
where do we sign? Okay, I'm going to try and get through as many as we
yeah,
can.
Yeah, let's just do it. Quick fire.
At Macajim 45, ratings out of 10. Mm. Never mind, we have a 5-star rating. Ratings out of 10 for Superman the movie.
Superman the movie?
Yeah.
That's probably personally 4 because it loses a star because of that whole making the Earth go back in time bit, which I never...
So you're marking it out of 5 instead of 10, like he asked you to do. I mean, come on.
Oh, God, I'm just... Honestly, this is just the Empire way, isn't it?
It is.
8.
8. 8 out of 5 for Superman the movie. Champ Celluloid asks, I think it was Dan who introduced me to the phrase Uncanny Valley.
Yes.
Has Hollywood solved that phenomenon yet?
It's much improved, I think. But the problem is, whenever they try and do anything where you have CG characters that could just quite easily be played by people, do you know? It's kind of... When it's apes, for example, like in the Amazing Planet of the Apes movies, or Gollum, or, you know, when it's something definitely non-human, I mean, I'm still... you know, for example, I still don't quite understand why Lord Snoke in The Force Awakens, even though he's played brilliantly by Andy Serkis, why it needed to be a performance-captured character. Not that it was Uncanny Valley. But yeah, it's kind of when you're kind of trying to bring it too close to what could have been done otherwise, naturally, that it's still not quite working.
Okay.
But for the most part, I think we're out of there.
Close. Close enough. At Dr. Junior says, what item would you take from the office?
We've got a toy cave troll, which my kids really want. So I'd steal that.
Do it.
Screw it, just take it.
Ah, it's part of the furniture. I couldn't do it.
Of course you could.
We're not
attached to it, Dan.
No,
it's fine. The cave troll, I mean, and also it's good, because he doesn't get played with, because obviously, you know, we're not children in the Empire office.
That's cute that
we're not
that.
Totally immature. I'd take it home. It'd get trashed in like 2 minutes.
Okay. Take it.
No, come on. Did you learn nothing from Toy Story 2? Toys are meant to be played with.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Except those...
It's covered in dust.
..may have value in years to come. You keep those in the box.
Yeah.
You keep those in the box.
Yeah, if you keep them in the box, it's better.
I haven't touched my...
You get loads of money for it.
Got a massive shield helicarrier from Comic-Con.
You're awful.
Although I play with my Galactus.
Well, I mean, I don't... What you do in your own time, Chris, is...
It's 19 inches.
Mm.
Fully
your
articulated.
Your planet eater.
Please stop.
Ethan,
sorry, I was going to try to make a joke about a moon there, but it just wasn't going to work.
Don't do that.
Instead, Uranus.
Oh.
Ethan Runt asks, have you seen the Alec Baldwin BT ads?
I've seen one of them and it made me chuckle gently.
Well done, advertisers.
Yeah,
I like those ads.
Yeah.
I like the Ryan Reynolds ones as well. Is Dan Jolin being forced to leave? This is from Versus BCCI, because he disagreed about what Matrix sci-fi moment to put in the feature.
No, because I won that battle.
# he was right.
Yeah. No, I won it. I was the victor. And to the victor, the spoils.
And he's already outlined his reasons for leaving. Chris Murphy, Murphy's Boredom, says, a little cliche, but when, if ever, have you felt most starstruck?
George Clooney. Years and years and years and years ago. I went to interview him, and it was a really good interview, actually. But yeah, I was sort of waiting outside, and then he came out with the person that would be interviewing him beforehand, and he was all being nice, and he turned around and he saw me, and he said, "Hi, Dan, I'm George." And I was just like, "Yeah, no, you're George Clooney." And he said, "Come in. You know, can I get you a drink?" He was all Mr. Charm and everything, and I ended up like an hour later, stumbling out of the room and stepping out of the hotel.
What happened in the intervening hour?
And stepping out into the street and walking off, thinking, "Oh, that was really good. He was really nice. I liked him." And then I realised, like 2 minutes later, I'd been walking in completely the wrong direction to the direction I needed to be going, and I just stumbled off.
You were in love,
and I was like, I just went, "Oh yeah, okay." So that is being starstruck, isn't it? Because
yeah.
I was dazed, but that hasn't happened since.
It's always somebody that gets you.
Mm. They're just normal people, Dan.
Mm.
They're as frightened of you as you are of them.
I think that's spiders, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Well, the vision's based on movement. That's celebrities, right?
That's
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
It's actually not, but, you know.
Okay. I think you're thinking of guinea pigs.
Guinea pigs.
Guinea pigs.
I'm terrified of
guinea pigs.
I do
know one thing, though, about celebrities is that they move in herds.
They do move in herds.
They do.
Or, actually, the technical term is flock.
Oh, that's true.
Yes,
that's
a true. Flock of celebrities.
Monty H. Withnell asks, who has the best movie beard?
Oh, my God, that's tough. Because, I mean, I mean, you know, Tony Stark's kind of gets on my nerves a little bit, I think, because it's just so fiddly and everything. I think, can I have a non-movie one? Can I do TV?
course you can, Dan.
Can I do Andrew Lincoln in The Walking Dead for a bit? That's an astonishing beard. I love that beard. Actually, Travis Fimmel's in Vikings is pretty good as well, if you're talking TV ones.
I would have got Brendan Gleeson in...
In Troy?
Calvary.
No. Calvary.
Calvary okay, is
yeah,
good
that's
beard.
A good beard.
It's magnificent stripes.
It's got to be a real one, though, hasn't it, really? If it's a fake one, it can't count. All the dwarf beards from The Hobbit. You know, yeah, you could go Gandalf, but you know, Ian McKellen doesn't really.
The correct answer to this question is, of course, Kurt Russell in The Thing. But that's
no. That's a good answer. That is a good answer.
At Don Lyle says, did you get any feedback after calling salmon fishing in Yemen an insipid piece of shit?
No. For some reason, nobody felt the need to respond to that. Did I say that?
I don't remember you saying that.
I don't remember saying that.
You probably said it in the office. I think we all have said that at some point.
Maybe I was in one of my darker moods at the time. But it is an insipid piece of shit, though.
At Fector Fictor asks, what's he not going to miss about the job?
Well, I think a lot of the things that I do this job for, I will still be doing in some form. You know, the joy is still there. So, I mean, I guess it's the 90-minute commute.
You're not going to miss it?
No. Okay. I will not miss the 90-minute commute. I will not miss the Metropolitan line being packed full of people on a hot day. And, I will not miss that.
What will you
miss? Like, every day. What will I miss? Mm-hmm. Most of all, from the job.
The people! What will you miss, Dan?
Didn't let me think about it.
Your colleagues!
The regular money, the salary, I think. That's obviously the salary is important. The benefits, so obviously holiday pay, there's that.
Best co-workers in the world.
When you get sick pay when you're ill, obviously you just get money anyway, which is I always thought that was really good. That was cool.
Seeing films for free.
Pension contributions being matched by the company. That was always quite a nice thing. And sorry, Helen, what was it you said?
I didn't. I was just coughing.
Oh, okay. Oh, and also there's an amazing team of brilliantly creative people that I work with, and I think probably virtually every day have made me laugh in one form or shape or another, usually at Chris is rather than with him, but occasionally he does actually say something quite amusing. And it's you know, when you interview film stars about making movies, or like you're at the end of this franchise and how does it feel, and they usually go, oh, it's such like a family, and then and you're just like, yeah, I've heard that so many times. But it is kind of a bit of a family kind of an atmosphere, you know, when you work with the same people for so long. So I think, you know, that's going to feel like a wrench when I do finally step away from the office for the final time.
Nah, you'll be all right. At Cat Brown, formerly of this parish, ooh, asks, Dan, talk of your VG banned words list. What's the worst word crime a writer has committed on your watch?
Crikey. Oh, well, that's a bit cruel. I did when I was reviews editor, before I was features editor many, 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 many years ago. I did draw up a list of words or phrases that should not appear in reviews, which I think still stands in many ways, although there have been new ones since, interestingly enough. But it would be things like the obvious ones, like you do not describe something as a roller coaster ride, because just horrific cliche. Gem, was a word I always hated. Mm-hmm. You know, when the sort of people would say an overlooked gem or this or that. And it's not so much that they're inherently terrible words; it's just that after a certain amount of time, it feels like lazy writing.
You banned Star Wars, which I thought was really restrictive.
Only when the words are used separately. something on acid, maybe. No, hang on. I think like more recent ones is you would say the Avengers of, or the something something Avengers. You know what I mean? Mm. As a comparison point, but
hang on, I've just compared us to the Avengers in this very podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfavorably, I might add.
Yeah. So I used to have this list of words, and bless Kat for remembering it. I hope it wasn't because she used one of them and I had to go at her for it. Possibly it was. And what was the second part of the question? I can't remember. Oh, word crime on my watch. Oh, crikey. I can't honestly think of one. Sorry, because, you know, obviously the people that write for Empire are usually so amazing.
Was it when you wrote Smell It With Your Eyes as a joke and I put it through?
That, do you know what? Yeah, I'm going to blame this. That's a great one. Yeah, smell it with your eyes. My own writing. I don't know how it happened.
For Perfume.
For Perfume.
For the film Perfume, which I gave 4 stars to. But the worst thing about that was that when the review, because when, you know, when the people publicizing the film and they're making the posters, they see our reviews and they're like, oh, we'll take a quote from it. And I didn't know this was going to happen, but then the poster came out and it had Smell It With Your Eyes written on it. And I was just like, what? That's the worst thing I've ever written. And I don't know. It was just a brain fart. I don't know. To this day, I look back and I don't know what the hell I was thinking. Maybe I was on acid.
On a roller coaster.
I was on a roller coaster, acid fueled roller coaster ride of adrenaline.
Don't do it, kids.
What a gem. At Anno Dracula, a.k.a. Kim Newman of this parish, says, with so many new job opportunities in Britain, which major political party leadership should Dan Jolan contest?
Green Party.
Fair enough.
Because they seem nice.
Don't they, though?
Yeah. But, you know, I'd make them a bit more evil so that they could actually, you know, get more votes.
That escalated quickly, I'll be honest. I did not expect that. It's a bit like my plan to become manager of Manchester United and then sell all our best players and sell the ground and the training ground to Asda.
Yeah.
No, I mean, close to achieving it.
To be honest, I think the best thing generally would be my liberal dictatorship.
Oh, God. You and James both think that if you were dictators of the world, that things would be better.
It's hard to disagree. At underscore Spurs asks, does Dan know his name is an anagram of Old Ninja, and how does this make him feel?
I've actually never actually sat down and tried to do anagrams of my own name, so I'm really, really glad that that is an anagram of my name. But to be honest, I feel more like a young Ronin.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Masterless samurai.
No, I know what a Ronin.
You know?
Yeah.
And I say young because, you know, I'm only, you know, still in my early 40s, very early. Like, I'm 41.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I believe you, Dan.
Ollie Thomas at Ollie 2033 asks, neither of their mothers are called Martha. Make a better ending to Batman versus Superman. Go.
Batman looks into Superman's eyes. Superman looks into Batman's eyes. Something happens.
They kiss.
It's electric. They come together. Their lips locked. Their jaws move. Their cheeks
twitch.
Oh, this
is wrong.
Yes.
I think we should move away from
Dan's
slash fiction.
Batman.
No. God damn you, Dan. At Ollie Richards of this parish asks, do you still have the little hat you were obliged to wear anytime you wanted to talk about World of Warcraft?
Somewhere, I think. I think it's probably at the bottom of my children's dressing up box.
I wish he'd had to wear it. It used to be every single morning Dan would come in and he and James would have a half hour conversation about storming the Scarlet Monastery or something. It was unbelievable.
Well remembered. Well,
I'm still not sure they were talking about World of Warcraft. Mr. Nugent, John Nugent of this parish. We will get to people who aren't of this parish, and I know we got to go very quickly. What's the best, worst joke or pun you've ever managed to get published in the mag?
Oh, crikey. There have been so many. It's been 12 years, and it's been 12 issues a year, and so, you know, ooh. Can you do the 12 times table?
It's a gross 144.
I am. And within that are so many bad puns and so many amazing ones. So I couldn't highlight. I think one of my favourite things I've ever come up with was when Bowling for Columbine won the Palme d'Or, and although that's possibly before I started at Empire, I'm trying to remember. But anyway, whatever. The headline was Shock and D'Or. No, hang on. Was about Fahrenheit 9/11. When Fahrenheit 9/11, was that right? Was it Fahrenheit 9/11 win the Palme d'Or? Anyway, there you go. I'm an old ninja with bad memory. So screw it. What's
last
next
question, Lenny UK DJ. Sorry for not getting around all your questions, but we are being literally kicked out of the booth.
Yeah.
Lenny UK DJ asks, and we'll end on a high. Has there been any personal moment during your time at Empire where you've wanted to crawl into a ball and die?
Oh, not really. Not really, because I'm not that emotional.
Okay.
Not really. But, you know, It's been an amazing time. I mean, you know, I got to see the rise of Christopher Nolan as an amazing filmmaker. I got to see the return of Star Wars. You know, I've got to see the Marvel Studios phenomenon happen. You know, and it's absolutely amazing to be kind of, you know, in the front row when all these brilliant things go on. So let's actually end it on a high and say yes, absolutely.
I mean,
it's been a great decade to be here.
And let's point out, of course, this probably won't be the last time Dan's in the podcast. He will be popping in from time to time, I'm sure. Helen, of course, kind of officially left Empire. I've left Empire in the past, and we're still here. So people get dragged in, not least because there's two entrances to the pod booth, and it's very, very hard to block both of them at the same time.
Yeah, it really is.
Dan will be back in the podcast. On a personal note, I want to say that it's been a pleasure working with you. I first met you when you were working for The Terrifying Foes, the other film magazine in the UK, on one of my very, very first SIFF visit, 24-Hour Party People.
And, yeah, good times.
We clicked right away, I think it's fair to say. We met again at X-Men 2, and you know, and then you came to work for Empire, and it's been a pleasure. 12 years, my God. My God.
Yeah.
You're taking stock of your life and your career, and you're making changes, and my God,
and you're still
my
here, Chris,
God,
remember?
I'm still here. My God, what am I doing with my life? Anyway, it's been amazing. You're an incredible guy, an incredible writer, and it's been a joy working with you.
Amazing, thanks, man.
Thank you, Helen. Anything to
thanks,
say
Helen.
To this twat before he goes?
Well, you know, no. Of course, I think we're all going to miss Dan. He's been a mainstay for nearly as long
That's
as I've
Dan.
Been here.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's been an absolute pleasure. But we'll see him all the time anyway, so I don't feel like this is goodbye. I feel like it's laters.
Yeah. You know when you get rid of gout and then it comes back?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. Yeah. Okay, and that is it from the Empire Podcast for this week. Join us next week when we'll be joined by the Highlander himself, Christopher Lambert. And just to prove that Dan isn't buggering off anywhere soon, he did the interview. So
I'll
be hearing Dan next week as well. Until then, it is goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from Dan.
Farewell, my friends.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off for a good old manly cry while clutching Dan's purple banana holder. Not a euphemism. He genuinely does have one. See you next week. Bye.